Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Ben Brennis. I am joined today by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
Doing all right, Ben. Getting closer. Spring training is starting this week. Maybe we'll get some warmer weather in most of the country, especially the Northeast. So we shall see, but we're moving in the right direction.
I think as long as New Jersey and New York get warm weather, I don't think we care about anywhere else. I think
we're at least going to be pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we should really care about. It's just us, right? You know.
You can't go around
caring about every single other little place, like the other 48 states. I mean, come on, that's just you being too kind.
Why would we want to do that? What's wrong with me?
Exactly. I've been asking that for the last 2 years, right?
I'm not sure anyone's going to find the answer to that one yet.
So, right, are you excited about the outlook of the Mets season, or do you think that there is a better chance of – what do you think there's – sorry, I should rephrase that. What do you think there's a better chance of the Astros winning the World Series or the Mets actually having a winning record?
I'm going to say the Mets having a winning record.
Wow.
Because the Mets came close to having a winning record last year. And I mean, there was a lot of the season where they were unwatchable. There was guys in the lineup that I'm not sure if their mothers probably barely know who they are. I mean, it was bad. It was almost like the Lost Boys out there at times. So, I mean, and they still came close to the winning record. Granted, it was starting pitching. So they have to hope that they're going to be healthy again this year. But they have a lot of depth. Maybe we'll see Cespedes for a month, but, you know, Cespedes coming back, there's enough of it to say in, like, the 30th round of a draft champions or a best ball, hey, I'm going to take him, and maybe he'll come back. But knowing that it's Cespedes in the Mets, I'm definitely not holding my breath on it. But I think that they're going to be one of those teams where – they're going to do just enough, and they have enough kind of quality grinded out pieces. I mean, again, we say that now. And, I mean, it could be May 15th, Cano's getting booed out of Citi Field because he didn't run out of ball down the first base line. One or two of the pitchers is hurt. And then, boom, Brandon Nimmo comes back down to earth. Lagares gets hurt again. Keon Broxton's hitting 150. So, I mean, who knows? It very well could go sideways, and it could go sideways quickly. But I'm relatively optimistic.
Isn't it kind of sad that Keon Broxton may be the best pure center fielder that the Mets have had in the last couple of years?
As the owner of Keon Broxton in our 30-team staff dynasty, I don't think it's sad at all.
I don't know if you should own him then. Why and then give me an answer.
And I mean, and I took him late too. I took him obviously back when he was still in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I don't think anyone who was drafting already would have taken him, thinking that he was going to be on the Mets, unless they've done a draft within the last 3 weeks. So.
But I mean, when you get into the 600 range of picks, you're not really too picky with who you're taking.
Exactly. And Ray, where can you be found on Twitter?
I am at Ray_Kuhn_28 on Twitter.
And we're also joined by Scott Chu. How are you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Just got back from the curling national championship. So I am all kind of jacked up on all of the curling madness that's going on right now.
That sounds fun. And where can you be reached on Twitter, Scott?
You can find me on Twitter at Chusef Esquire. That's Chuseph Esquire. Right up on Twitter.
And Scott, what do you think? Do you think that the Mets will have a better chance of having a winning record, or do you think that the Astros have a better chance of winning the World Series?
I don't feel like answering this in the way that's probably right. I want to praise the Mets for making some moves, for trying to win baseball games, which is something that's not a lot of teams are trying to do right now, which is a real bummer. Because tanking only works when you're smart enough to do it and not everyone else is doing it too. So, you know what? Darn it. Give me the Mets. Let them. I'd love to see them have a winning season. I'd love to see them do what my own Tigers did when they lost, you know, over 100 games, got some free agents, rebuilt their team that way, and within 3 years, we're back in the World Series. They didn't win it, which, you know, screw the Cardinals. But I'd love to see that happen, and I'm going to wish for it so hard that I'm going to pick it.
All right, and I can be reached at the Brennus FWFP. Guys, tonight we're going to be talking about players that are inside the top 100 of the NFBC ADP. NFBC ADP, that is from January 15th till today's present date, that we think are very good values or are players that aren't being drafted high enough. So, Ray, why don't we start with you? Who was your first player that's in the AFC and the ADP of the top 100?
That would be Chris Bryant checking in at an ADP of 34. And, I mean, you'll see from Bryant and then also the next guy that I'm going to bring up a little bit later on, I'm going with a theme here, and that's young players who have a proven track record. So we're not talking about like a Vlad Guerrero or somebody like that that's shooting up draft boards. We're not talking about a Juan Soto who, I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue with what he did last year when he came out of nowhere. But we're talking about guys that for more or less or maybe a little more established, had some down years last year, health, you could obviously blame injuries, that I'm thinking that it's going to be a one-year blip and they don't necessarily deserve to drop from where they were last year in ADP. I mean, Bryant, ADP 34, so we're talking third round. Put him in at third base, put him in the outfield. Cubs still have a solid lineup. I think the shoulder injury, both obviously the fact that he only played 102 games last year, so it kept him obviously off the field. But I think even when he came back and even before he went out a little bit, it certainly was a factor. I mean, his ISO went from 242 to 188 last year. But if you look at 2015 through 2017, his ISO was 213, 262, 242. He hit 26, 39, and 29 homers in those 3 years. So, all right, fine, if you want to say that 2016 was a little bit of an outlier, that's fair. But I think at the least, we're still looking at a guy that's going to hit 30 home runs, come close to driving in 100 runs, if not driving 100 runs. He did it both in 2016 and 2017. He's going to hit for a good average. Even, 275, 292, 295 for that three-year range. Last year, it dropped down to 272. So, I mean, if you're telling me 272 is a worst-case scenario, sign me up for that. I think we can see a little bit of a pop there, too. I think Bryant, I mean, last year, I'm pretty sure he was going more second round. So it's not a huge, huge discount as to where he was being taken last year, but it's still a little bit of a discount. So if you go pitcher, first round, second round, depending on how you decide to set up your team, Bryant can be a solid, stable-ish player to take in the third round that also has some upside. What do you think about that?
Yes, I completely agree with everything that you're saying. Bryant going as low as he is, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I understand that last year there was the injury concerns and that this is something that you kind of expect to bounce back. Bryant's the type of player that people are either going to be in on or they're not. You know, there's a lot of people who don't necessarily believe that he's that top tier type player. And then there's others who expect him to win numerous MVPs over the next few years. And I'm in the boat that I don't expect numerous MVPs, but I expect him to be able to give you top 20 value consistently as long as he's able to stay healthy. And obviously, it's tough for any one player to be able to stay healthy a lot of their career. You know, there's not a lot of Cal Ripkins out there, and even if there was a Cal Ripken, you're not going to get to play every single day. You're not playing every single game, every single inning, because managers now follow analytics so much that they take players out, they give them rest days. There's too many different things. But I think that Bryant, as long as he's not on the DL for an extended amount of time, I think that he's going to be able to give you better value than his 32nd ADP. What do you think, Scott?
This is the time to buy Chris Bryant. A lot of people are going to be worried about this injury. A lot of people are going to be worried about you know, what he's going to do coming back. They're going to look at the numbers that he posted last year and feel underwhelmed by what they were. It's hard for our brains when we look at stat lines to automatically show what that might have looked like over 150 games, 160 games. But let me tell you right now, Chris Bryant is a former NL MVP, and that was no fluke. He's not Porcello winning the Cy Young, right? Chris Bryant is a legit talent. We were excited about him the moment he came up, and that's because he is an absolute monster with the bat. Chris Bryant is the kind of guy that you build franchises around because he has the talent to win MVPs, to hit 30 to 40 home runs, to play on a team that's very good, that still has a very good lineup. He's going to be hitting right with his buddy Anthony Rizzo, and he has a chance to be a really special player again, only you don't have to pay that price anymore, right? As early as a year ago, we were spending top 20 picks on guys like Chris Bryant. And just because a guy gets hurt doesn't mean he's ruined forever, right? Especially not when those players are the age of Chris Bryant. So if you like Chris Bryant, if you want a third baseman who has a chance to win an NL MVP, which I really think he still has in his bat, that's what you do. I agree that he is a player that you're targeting in the top 100. I agree that he's a player you're targeting in the top 50. And while third base is deeper than a lot of the other positions we're going to see, that doesn't matter because Chris Bryant is a type of talent that you don't really care about, you know, position depth or anything like that. You go and get him because he's the kind of guy that if he shows he's healthy, that if he shows he's over the shoulder injury, which he says he is, he's the kind of league winner at his current price, which is a, you know, a fancy word to throw around that a lot of us are going to do throughout the rest of the offseason. But Chris Bryant is a special player, and you're not taking him at a special price. So if you're like me and you believe in the guy, go and get him.
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, The Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market. With featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and FanGraphs, and many more, you will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for Roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
All right. So, Ray, why don't we jump into the next player? Or Ray and Scott, why don't we jump into the next player? And let's go and talk a little bit about Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy is my pick, and I think that he's someone who is going to exceed his value just because I think that he's going to be a lot healthier this year. He's playing in cores. Right now he's ADP of 71. His exact ADP is 72.46, but there's a lot of players that he is going after that I think he could easily have a significantly better season than I could. See, if he's healthy, he could have something similar to what he had in Washington a few seasons ago, where he was a top tier player. He's already someone who knows how to get hits, and playing in cores for half your games is going to be a big boost. I mean, we know that cores not only helps with a little bit of added power, but it also helps with BABIP. So if he's already someone who hits for high average, the BABIP is going to even help propel his average higher. So that means both average and MVP leagues, you can expect a small boost. The lineup is good enough, and there's a lot of hitters up and down the lineup that you can get a lot of runs and RBIs on. And he's a good enough hitter to still be able to hit between 20 and 25 home runs. So you mix that in with the fact that he's going to play both second and first base in eligibility purposes this year. And I don't know what else you could really ask for outside of saying, hey, you know what, just play 145 games, at a minimum, and I think we're in a good spot. Do you agree, Greg?
Well, I mean, I guess ADP is 72. We're talking about taking him in the sixth round. So it's relatively – so it's not an insignificant investment. But, I mean, he over the last few years, he has shown that he can stay relatively healthy. So I'm not necessarily concerned about the health. We know the guy can flat-out hit. And as you touched on, not only is he himself going to benefit, but batting in that line, batting in that situation in Coors Field where there's more offense, it's going to be more guys on base, more RBI opportunities. We know what he could do as a run producer. I mean, we could sit here all day and night probably and go back and forth as to whether the Rockies even needed to sign Daniel Murphy with Garrett Hampson and Brandon Rogers and Ryan McMahon all hanging around. You have to wonder when the heck are they going to get a chance to play. But I think if they brought Murphy in, it is to play, and it's going to be either first base, second base. You have to like the eligibility. But if you're sitting here and you're going to tell me you're concerned about Murphy's age or his health or whatever, you got the two hitters going above him are David Dahl and Joey Votto. Like, now, can you tell me what David Dahl has actually done at the major league level to warrant taking him 71st as far as ADP, 69th player off the board?
I mean, that's the same argument that I brought up last week. What has David Dahl done that would warrant him even being considered a top 100 pick?
And, I mean, No, go ahead.
And like what you were saying before about Murphy being able to be healthy, I mean, last year he did miss part of he missed a good chunk of the season, almost half, because of injuries. And then he had issues prior at the end of the season the year before. And I don't expect him to necessarily have the same type of lingering injuries. We just know that because he is up there in age, if he does have a small injury, it could easily end up being a DL stint that could be 2 to 3 weeks. I guess I should stop saying DL because I believe it changed to the injured list, so the IL.
But I mean, call me crazy, but I mean, it's not like Dahl's been 100% healthy either. I mean, I know everyone wants to be on the cutting edge of grabbing the next big thing. So I get the fascination with Dahl, but I mean, it's also my same argument with Chris Bryant over Vlad Guerrero. In a redraft league, I mean, Bryant is going about 10 to 12 picks ahead of Guerrero based on ADP. But to me, if you're just talking about 2019 here, why aren't you going to take the guy that has done it, has proven that he can do it, and there's nothing there that necessarily says, hey, he's slowing down or he's entering a downslope? When someone like Guerrero, if you're taking him, I'm pretty sure like the 90% tile of outcomes is going to be what Chris Bryant has already done for 3 years. So, I mean, maybe I'm the one missing out.
I don't know. How did going grabbing players like Victor Robles last year at a certain part of the draft work out for people who thought that he had a good chance to be up? You know, sometimes taking that quote-unquote next big thing is not the best thing to do.
Exactly. I mean, again, you don't want a team of 40-year-olds either. But if you look at, again, where Murphy's going, the guy right ahead of him is Joey Votto. And Votto's power dropped tremendously last year, and he's getting up there in age as well. I know he obviously has the on-base skill. Cincinnati improved the lineup around him. The batter going after Murphy is Miguel Andujar, who had one good season. And at this point, we still don't know what the heck is happening with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. I know on Saturday I had seen that the Yankees, maybe now they did actually offer Machado 7 or 8 years. I think that's where Machado truly wants to play. So maybe the Yankees do swoop in at the 11th hour. And then what does that mean for Machado? So for Andujar. And we know Andujar has defensive issues. So, I mean, he's far from a sure thing. And if we drop down after that, you have Marcelo Ozuna. He did have shoulder surgery last year as well. It's unclear how exactly he's going to be. From every indication, he's going to be okay, but there's still some level of health concern there. Jesus Aguilar really did it for 1 year. Puig, we know, can be a wild card. Jonathan Villar, you're drafting for a steal. So, I mean, in that range there, it's not like you have 100% sure things. So why not go with someone with Murphy is when the worst thing you can say about him is, hey, he's a little bit older, so maybe he's going to get hurt again. But you know what? The bat is still pretty damn good, and it's hard to argue with that line drive stroke.
You know what? I think that the most egregious thing about Daniel Murphy being taken here is that his low ADP is 161. I mean, I don't know what type of league those people are in, but taking Murphy at 161, I don't know what that would do. Now, the only thing I can think of is that that draft potentially happened before he signed in Colorado. That's really the only thing that can actually potentially save that person's thought process, because it could be like, okay, he doesn't have a team, so me signing him now doesn't make any sense. You can't guarantee that there's not someone who doesn't want to take a chance. He could theoretically be hurt, so on and so forth. So I can understand not signing someone or not drafting someone if he's unsigned. But if that happened after he signed to Colorado, I have no idea what the person is thinking about.
But, I mean, again, the only thing is when we're looking at – I mean, someone also took him 39th. So, I mean, the thing with NFBC ADP is that with the overall championships – then maybe we should hit the caveat in that the overall championships, you really need to pretty much hit on every pick and have those few that really dazzle. So if people have multiple teams, I wouldn't necessarily say it's like a GPP on a DraftKings or a FanDuel, but it's somewhat that strategy. So, you know, guys like Dahl get popped up. Someone like Murphy's going to get popped down because someone's looking, you know, for that edge, and it's like, you know what, if you have these five guys, that if they all really go off, then that could set you up well for the overall championship. So I think we should maybe throw that caveat in there, that I think the ADPs, I think kind of it covers both ends of the range. I mean, a lot of these guys, like even like Jonathan Villar, someone took him 50th, and then someone took him 121st.
Scott, you there? Oh boy. I think Ray died too.
I'm here.
Ray's dead.
I'm here.
No, you're dead, Ray.
I am here.
No, I know you're really dead. I know you are. Don't lie to me. Sounds like Scott is literally being murdered as we speak. So.
Yeah, but I survived.
Oh, good, good. So, Ray, finish your point.
I'm not honestly. I think I finished it.
Okay. Scott, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy? As pick 71, do you think that it's absurd? Or do you agree with both Ray and I that he should be valued significantly higher than where he's actually going based on the other players around him?
I'm not sure if I'd say significantly higher, but, you know, sort of just like off the cuff, thinking about him when I've been in drafts, I've seen someone take him. He's usually been the top player on my, you know, top player on my board for that position, you know, usually at second base. And I usually just say, okay, yeah, I get it. You know, I feel like we know what he is now, you know, the new Daniel Murphy, so to speak, the one that lifts the ball, that hits the ball harder than the, you know, the previous version of Daniel Murphy from several years ago. So yeah, you know, it's this weird thing to say that he's fine, cause he's a top 100 player. He's more than fine. He's very good. He's never been to me someone that I really say, like, I gotta go and get this guy. He's more of a, yeah, that's good. Good job. Whoever took him. It usually isn't me, but I say, yeah, all right.
And do you think that when he was picked at 161 for NFBC, do you think that was prior to him getting picked up by Colorado, or do you think there's a chance someone just really, really dislikes him, or multiple people dislike him, I should say?
Oh, that's a good question, because it's really hard to know. You know, we're always looking at limited sample sizes at this point. And it's hard to know exactly what pulled him. I would say, you know, at 161, it's gotta be prior to him being in Colorado. It's gotta be, or some kind of, you know, like 12 team setting where everybody else felt really good about their second base spot, you know, that, you know, sometimes in those 10 to 12 teamers, you'll see a really good player fall for a really long time because everybody feels good about their, you know, their guy at that position, and a random guy will fall. And when you do the NFBC, you know, when you do the NFBC ADP, I don't know about you guys, maybe you covered for this. I usually don't. I just say, show me all the drafts. I want the largest sample size. But in those, especially in those 12 team cut lines, you know, sometimes a really good player will fall much farther than he would have in a 15 teamer when you've got to fill second base and middle infield. So that's my guess as to why he'd fall so far. It's like a 12 teamer, or maybe he hasn't, you know, maybe he hasn't gone to, you know, his preferred landing spot when they did that particular draft, but that's usually my guess.
Fair enough. All right, Scott, why don't we move into your player and tell us a little bit about Zach Wheeler.
Zach Wheeler. So Zach Wheeler is this guy who he kind of starts the blob of pitching. You know, you've gotten through a lot of like the bona fide aces and some of like the very big time guys, and you start to hit this point, you know, starting after pitcher like 25 or so, you start getting this point where like there's 10 guys somebody might take. And what Zach Wheeler did last year for me was for like him more than everybody else. So Zach Wheeler, where he stayed healthy, he had been sort of a big player a few years ago, where he wasn't so much a big player as he was. We were all saying, hey, watch out for Zach Wheeler. He's a big pitcher coming out of the Mets. He was, you know, we were talking about him with Matt Harvey and Orson Syndergaard, and we're saying, hey, this is another guy that's coming out. And Zach Wheeler, of course, went around and got himself hurt, and he missed a lot of time for where we said, oh, he's out. You can't really consider this guy anymore. Finally found some more consistent playing time last season. And what we saw was a big of the we saw back in 2013, which a mid almost pressing the home runs, which he had not done back in 2017, which was the last time we saw him extensively, where he had also been walking a lot of guys. And it really made me feel like Zach Wheeler is healthy again. Zach Wheeler can be a guy who, you know, he threw 182 innings last year. You know, it's hard to bet on any pitcher pitching 180 innings, but I feel that Zach Wheeler can give you 180 innings. He can give you a 3.5 or better ERA, a strikeout an inning. He really pulled the walks in last year, and he continued to suppress the home run. And that's, you know, not super hard to do in the big old ballpark he plays in over at Citi Field. But I really felt good about the things that he did. This is a former first round pick, number 6 overall, actually way back in 2009. So he's not so much a prospect. He's 28 years old. But everything he showed me last year looked legitimate to me. And he's being drafted around a bunch of guys who have, I feel, a lot more work. Saw with the 2018 Zach Wheeler. And this is less of me saying that there's a bunch of evidence to suggest he has no warts, and more of it is saying I saw what I saw in 2018. I really believe in the 3.31 ERA, the 3.25 FIP, and the reasonable walk rate, the good strikeout rate. That to me is better than a lot of the guys you're seeing being taken within that glob of pitching towards the back end of the top 100. And so I am jumping in at him all over the place.
First of all, I really hope you're right, because I have Wheeler in a ton of leagues already this year. A ton of leagues, because I find myself where I'll get my ace, and then I'll sit there and say, oh, I like this bat, I like this bat. And then when I go to take my SP2 or maybe my SP3, depending on the league and the strategy, boom, there Wheeler is. And I look at the pitchers around him, and I'm like, you know what? I really like Zach Wheeler a lot more than all these other options. So, I mean, when you tell me Wheeler's sitting there with an ADP in 93, the two pitchers, starting pitchers going ahead of him, Mike Fultonevich, Germán Márquez, ADP 84, 86 respectively. And then if you go past that, you have Bumgarner at 76, Berrios at 77. We talked about Bumgarner last week. I'd rather Wheeler than Bumgarner, to tell you the truth. And between Berrios and Wheeler, I'm not so sure that I wouldn't take Wheeler. between the two straight up. And the thing with Wheeler is, I mean, I know not to beat all the points that you just made and to repeat them, but I mean, even the last 10 starts of the season from Wheeler last year, they were really freaking good. I think working with Dave Island, working with Mickey Callaway has helped him, even as far as some of the mental stuff. And not for nothing, as you said, this guy was a first-round pick. He's doing what he was supposed to be doing. So we really shouldn't be surprised by this either.
I love Zach Wheeler. Do I actually need to give more comments? Because I've talked about him, I feel like, for years. But I love Zach Wheeler, and Ray can attest to this because he and I have talked Zach Wheeler numerous times because he's owned him, and I always try to trade for him. And then, you know, Ray's the type of mean guy who won't actually trade unless, you know, you give him value, which doesn't really make sense to me. I've never understood that with Ray.
Well, I mean, you have enough guys that you can trade for and not give up value. So, I mean, why would you want to trade with me then anyway?
Exactly. I love Zach Wheeler. Last year he was able to be healthy, and, you know, there was talk, a lot of talk early last season in ESPN New York radio that they're like, well, why not go and flip Zach Wheeler for JT Realmuto? Well, at this point, I don't even know if that would have made sense because the Mets went out and signed Wilson Ramos this year, and they kept Zach Wheeler. So, you know, at what point would you say, you know, this is a smarter move than going and making that trade? But at the same point in time, Zach Wheeler showed last year exactly the type of guy he can be. If he's able to put in another season like that, would anyone question if he's maybe a top 10 to 15 pitcher, if he's able to do what he did for the second half of last year, the entire year this year?
No, you know, I also write for Pitcher List, and a guy there, Nick Pollock, did a great GIF breakdown of Zach Wheeler to talk about him. And he ranks Zach Wheeler 18th right after, you know, right between Corbin and James Paxton and Steven Strasburg. And that's where I have that's where I have Zach Wheeler. You look at the arsenal that he brings in, especially in the second half last year. And I say, if he throws 180 innings again, and like you said, shows us that arsenal that he showed us last year, why isn't that a top 15 pitcher? I mean, when you look at the top 15, it sounds weird, but when you look at the top 15 starting pitchers, once you get past like Nola, Severino, Syndergaard, you start looking at guys that could very easily only throw 140, 150 innings. You know, you start looking at Kershaw, Carrasco, Buehler, Tyone. These guys really might be, really might not throw 180 innings. Or you're looking at guys who've only shown it to us once, right? The Clevengers, the Corbins. You don't know what they're going to be necessarily next year. You know, I really like Patrick Corbin as well. But what's to say Zach Wheeler can't keep what he showed last year, just like Patrick Corbin, and be just as good, right? That he's an incredible pitcher last year. And it's not, there's nothing that suggests that it was luck or fluky, right? The guy's got an incredible arsenal. He's throwing, he's throwing 3-4 pitches that are all top notch just because that's why he was taken in the first round. That's a guy who I want to buy into. And when you're looking at, pitcher 25, 26, you're starting looking at the Herman Marquez, the Jose Berrios guys who could very easily be 4+ ERA pitchers, Mike Foltynewicz. Why not Zach Wheeler, a guy who's shown us he can actually be a SP2, maybe even borderline SP1, as opposed to these other guys who said, at my best, I can flirt with SP2, SP3.
Sorry, I was muted. Ray, why don't we move into your next player? Who do you have to talk about?
I have Corey Seager, who is currently the 12th shortstop coming off the board. Now, going into last season, as far as young shortstops go, there's pretty much, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but you had Lindor, you had Seager, you had Correa. Three of them were kind of linked together. Lindor, obviously, the calf injury now notwithstanding, Lindor had a phenomenal season last year, rocketed up into the first round because he has the power and the speed, and there's very few guys that can bring that to the table. And I think it's a discussion for a different day as far as how far Lindor is going to drop and where we feel comfortable taking him. And, you know, is he really going to miss the first month of the season? Do we buy the 7 to 9 weeks? That notwithstanding, Correa had the back problems last year, really did not have a good season at all. I think even when he was in the lineup, the back was most certainly a factor, and we've touched on this on other podcasts. Previously, Seager had Tommy John surgery, which to me, I can't, for a shortstop, when as long as he shows that he can make the throw, I don't necessarily care about the arm coming back. As long as he can throw well enough to be in the lineup, I care about his bat. Gray's going 50 when his performance suffered because of a bad back last year. Seager, I mean, granted, Seager really didn't play at all last year. I think he played in 26 games. Seager's all the way down 33 picks later. If you ask me, as much as I like Correa at 50, I like Seager at 83 that much more, because why can't he go back to 2016, 2017 levels when he hit 308, 295 respectively, drove in 105 runs in 2016, 26 homers, followed by 22 homers. I mean, honestly, why not? Last year before he got hurt, his K percentage dropped down to 14.8%. Granted, it was only 115 plate appearances, so it's a smaller sample. But still, Seager's coming back, and if he's healthy enough to be in the lineup, I think Seager at 83, I'm taking that every day of the week.
Yeah, for me, Seager is someone who I'm not the biggest fan of Seager in general, but I can't argue with you that if your point is why wouldn't I want Corey Seager where he's going as opposed to Carlos Correa, I can understand the argument. The problem is Corey Seager is someone who I've never been as high on, and I don't necessarily believe that he's as good as what he has shown. I believe he's been a little overrated, unfortunately. I think that he has the ability to show that he can be a top-tier hitter, maybe someone in the top 40. But I just don't believe he has enough consistency to do it from year to year. He's someone who, while I would want to buy him over buying someone like Carlos Correa, I think he's still someone who I'm not necessarily going to look to address, and I feel like I could get someone who I personally like more outside of the top 100 if I needed to that can play shortstop. And that's just, you know, my own personal preference. There's just something about watching Corey Seager play that I'm just not the biggest fan of, but that's just me. I agree with what your thought is on the ADP. I just can't get behind him as someone who I have to get.
I think Corey Seager for me represents the last of the shortstops that I really feel comfortable with starting at shortstop. He's, you know, right now, you know, if you look at ADP from January 20th to today, you see Corey Seager over at the 12th shortstop. He's right ahead of, you know, he's right behind Gene Segura. He's right ahead of Jose Peraza. And that seems about right to me. I think the one thing that jumps out to me when you look at Corey Seager is his stats don't always look that sexy, right? Because you can't really project him for more than 25-ish home runs. He's certainly probably not going to be a 100 RBI kind of hitter. But that's because when you look at when you just look at those numbers, you know, he doesn't really steal bases. You're like, oh, what's so exciting about this guy? He's got the one stat that's really hard to, you know, it doesn't jump off the page like others, and that's batting average, right? He struggled with it a little bit in 26 games last year. I'm not that worried about that, but he is a, you know, he's a career 302 hitter, and we have quite, you know, we have quite a few at bats to make that seem legitimate. And when you look, you say, okay, this guy should bat at least 285. You know, you look at the projections, they all have him at like 284 ish. And that's a stat that doesn't really jump off the page like home runs, runs, RBIs. We jump to someone's Fangraphs page, we're all very drawn to, you know, the first couple numbers that jump up, like, oh, look at the homers, look at the runs, look at the RBIs. That must mean he's good. And even though intuitively we know that there's other stats that matter, in an OBP league, Corey Seager probably is a little overrated because guys like Carlos Correa are going to put up a similar OBP to Corey Seager. But in batting average, the guy puts wood on the ball all the time. He strikes out generally less than 20%, which is something we really like to see, something we don't see all that often. And he's really trying to put the ball in play, and he keeps his batting average quite high. So in a very standard league, like your very standard 5x5, he's going to be underrated simply because the runs and RBIs are going to be lower than you might normally want. And the home runs might be a little lower than you normally want, but he's making up for that in batting average. Not unlike his teammate Justin Turner, except, you know, he might be a little more durable than that. It's hard to say just because we haven't had a ton of time to look at him. But I like Corey Seager, and he's the kind of guy that I think will routinely fall in drafts simply because the counting stats aren't there, but the batting average is. And if the first 10, 11 or so shortstops have been taken and I need one, Corey Seager is really the last guy I'm trying to jump out and get, who I really feel can be a solid spot in shortstop. Cause after that, I really feel there's a big tumble.
All right, Scott, let's move on to your second player. Who is someone that you like inside of the top 100?
Have we had a chance to talk about Matt Carpenter yet?
We have not.
Oh, Matt Carpenter, who I have been recently been calling the Magic Carp because, you know, I'm secretly a Pokemon fan. Matt Carpenter last year really, you know, I don't want to say he broke out because the guy's 33 years old, right? 33 year olds don't so much break out. But what Matt Carpenter did last year was hit 36 home runs. And a lot of people want to say like, oh, you know, it's fluky. He hasn't done that before. You know, you look at 2016, 2017, he was 21 home runs and 23 home runs, and all of a sudden 26. And part of that is because the way that Matt Carpenter approaches the plate and the way that he really kind of attacks the ball is he does not swing outside of the zone very often. And what he's really done is really made it so that when he comes up to plate, he's a little more aggressive than he's been in the past. But what he's trying to do is he's looking for his pitch. And the guy's got an incredible eye. You watch him in the batter's box, you realize that what he's trying to do is find his pitch. He's really looking for it, not even just his pitch in his spot. And every time he finds it, last year specifically, he went ahead and yanked that right out of the yard. He wanted to make sure the pitcher knew that he threw it in the perfect spot for Matt Carpenter and absolutely sent it. And, you know, his experience and his approach at the plate, I mean, the guy's got a, 15.1% walk rate last year. Throughout his career, he's been a double-digit walk rate guy. He does not strike out very much. I think last year was a career high in the majors striking out, and it was 23.3%. What Matt Carpenter's been doing for the Cardinals is, nothing short of a phenomenal with the bat. And last year he really kind of showed how he was going to turn that discipline and that approach into a power approach instead of just slapping the ball around trying to score runs, which is what we always used him for in fantasy previously. We always wanted him to be the 100 run guy for the bad guy Cardinals, so to speak. And last year he really said, you know what I can also do? I can also hit this ball out of the park. And that's exactly what he did. Everything in the X stats say that everything was legitimate. In fact, last year, Matt Carpenter was one of the best hitters in terms of high drive rate, which is, if you go to X stats, you'll see that high drive rate is very similar to barrels that they have over at Baseball Savant, which is the best class of batted balls. And guys that put the ball in play as much as he did rarely had high drive rates above 20%. He was at 21.2. And that means when he was hitting the ball, he was hitting it with monstrous authority. There's even a lot of evidence just to suggest last year that he was very unlucky. So last year he had a batting average of 257 and a slugging of 523. If you go and look at the X stats based on the quality of contact, his launch angle, his exit velocity, things like that. They say that he should have had an average closer to 286 and a slugging of 588. That's a huge gap between what actually happened and what probably should have happened based on his quality of contact. Matt Carpenter to me is someone who really has flipped a switch, who is a guy that should probably hit about 30 home runs. And when I look at things like his steamer projections, which say 141 games, 25 home runs, 95 runs, 70 RBI. To me, that's almost insulting. I think the guy has really shown that he was a different hitter last year, that he did something new. And projections are always going to be you're late on guys that are showing they're doing something new, especially when they're older. And that to me says, when I believe that Matt Carpenter is a guy that plays first and third base, especially at first base, which is a more shallow position than it's been historically, a guy that could very well hit 260, 270, not just the 257 he hit last year, hit those 30 home runs, have a spot at the top of a Cardinals lineup that still looks like it's going to be very good. I want every single piece of that I can get. And I find him jumping in drafts to grab him well before his ADP.
All right, I think the conclusion that I'm coming to tonight is that I'm not sure that we can play in leagues together. Because I am taking the exact same path on Carpenter for all the same reasons. I love the fact that he's eligible at both corners. I mean, if you look at StatCast on Baseball Savant, 13.4% power rate. The league average is 6.1, so he's more than double. He has a 44.4% hard hit rate. The launch angle is 20.5%. League average is 10.9. So, I mean, everything right there is coming up great for him. You add Goldschmidt to that lineup. You have a healthy Ozuna coming back. You have a healthy Paul DeJong. You have Harrison Bader up for the full season. Give me all the Matt Carpenter I can handle. I really don't like first base this year. I mean, and even the top guys, Freeman, Goldschmidt, Rizzo. I mean, maybe you guys can tell me if I'm being overly critical, but I don't love them. Like, I don't love them. I mean, I'll take them and I'll be happy with it if they fall to me, but I'm not feeling warm and squishy about getting them. I'd rather, you know, get somebody else and then get me my Carpenter in the sixth round.
I mean, I'll tell you this. If you go and look at the ADPs, you'll see Freeman, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Bellinger. Those guys are going in the top 50. Then you got Votto at 5, Carpenter at 6, and they're going 70 and 71. Then you've got the only other two that are going in the top 100 are Aguilar and Abreu at 81 and 88. And then after that, you've got guys that are even more sketchy, right? You've got Joey Gallo, Max Muncy, Jerickson Profar, Edwin Encarnacion, Matt Olson. I don't want any of that. You know, I like those guys at corner, you know, in my CI spot in a 15 teamer. But if you're talking about my first baseman, give me Matt Carpenter all day. Let me jump in. I've taken him in as early as 50 or 60. You know, once those top four first basemen are off the board, you know, I'll take Freeman, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Bellinger. But once we start looking at the Joey Votto range, I'm basically sitting back and thinking, can I get Carpenter or can I wait one more round and get Carpenter? That's my thought process at every point in that draft.
I hate doing podcasts with you guys because it's so boring to agree with you guys. I mean, look, I like Matt Carpenter. I guess for the sake of argument, I'm going to have to say that he's not someone like I was going with Seager that I'm not looking to target. I understand the benefit of taking someone like him, and I very much do like him. I think he's a great bet, and I'm just wondering if he's going to sell out for power. If you're looking to get all that power, then that's a great person to go for. But at the same point in time, I guess you want him to still be want someone that gets runs and the RBIs and the high OBP, and you know, it just depends on what you're looking for. You know, you could almost go and wait for someone like Edwin Encarnacion at pick 123 if you want the power and some similar stat, and you want someone else who's in that Matt Carpenter range. Or, you know, if you want someone who can hit for some power and could potentially get some steals with some OBP, you know, you could wait for someone like a Jerickson Profar. There's a lot of different things that you can do, but I totally understand why you would want someone who has had Carpenter's pedigree being taken in the top 100. So for the last guy that we're going to talk about, I want to talk a little bit about Nelson Cruz. Obviously, there's not a ton to talk about him because he is as good of a player as you can get to play the utility slot outside of someone like a David Ortiz. You know, you're
Chris Davis?
Pardon?
What about Chris Davis?
We're talking about players that are good, so
stick with Cruz. Are you talking about the good Chris Davis or the really, really shitty Chris Davis?
I'm talking about Chris Davis with a K.
I mean, yes and no. if that Chris Davis ever didn't hit 40 home runs, I'm pretty sure he's not replacing the value that you expect him to get. If he were to have a season that he misses games, you're screwed. Sorry, Scott, what were you saying? The reason I'm picking someone like a Nelson Cruz is because Nelson Cruz has an ADP.
You can say, you know, I like, but about.
Sorry, Scott, can you hold on for 1 second?
Yeah.
Ray, could you hear anything he said?
No.
Okay. Scott, repeat that.
Oh, I just said I really like Nelson Cruz and I'd rather talk about him.
I also agree. I mean, Nelson Cruz is someone who is as consistent as you can get. You know, he's always going to have around the same average. He's going to have similar home run RBI stats. He's never going to really give you speeds. He's not going to always give you a ton of runs. Now he's going from a team that was pretty good last year in Seattle to a team that has expectations to be somewhat decent this year. But I think Nelson Cruz is the last player inside of the top 100 that you could say is honestly – the best bet. I guess you could say Donaldson could be, but he's right at 100. So if you want to say someone who, you know, is under the actual ADP of 100, it would be Nelson Cruz. I think Nelson Cruz is just as consistent as you can get, and he probably will return top 50 player, but he never gets drafted like that. Do you guys disagree?
All right, I am going to disagree because this has been way too boring. And I'm pretty sure the only thing I can really do to shake this up as we close it out is say that I'm going to draft Billy Hamilton in all my leagues this year. So
that's the half off my podcast.
I mean, I feel like we've been waiting for Cruz to kind of peter off the last few years. He's going to turn 39 in July. Yes, we think the Twins can be good and interesting and whatever. We thought the same thing last year. Instead, Paul Molitor got fired. So, I mean, how much of the Twins' fate and then therefore Cruz's RBI opportunities is built into Buxton and Sano maybe doing what they're supposed to do? Yes, I know he hasn't slowed down. I guess that he's been to a few different teams over the past few seasons, so I'm not necessarily worried about him going into a new clubhouse. The one point that I'm going to make is, how is he going to hit in April and May when it's snowing every other day in Minnesota? How is he going to hit outside in the cold with his 38-year-old body? Maybe this is going to be the year. But, I mean, I also get the point that Chris Davis is going 50 picks ahead of him. And, well, Chris Davis is probably going to hit for a few more. I mean, again, Chris Davis is going to hit for maybe 5 to 8 more home runs. Last year, Cruz only drove in, Cruz drove in, excuse me. He did drive in 97 runs, so the RBIs are pretty close. Between the two, I'd rather Chris Davis. Based on the price, I guess maybe I'd rather have Nelson Cruz, but I don't feel comfortable tying my utility spot up for a Nelson Cruz. Maybe this is going to be the year that he actually does fall apart.
Let me stop you right there. First of all, filling your utility spot early, to me, is no different than filling any other spot in your lineup, right? Utility is a spot you have to play. You have to have a guy there. And if you have Nelson Cruz there, that means you have one of the best two players in the league at the utility spot, right? Because everyone else you're drafting early on that are better than those guys are probably filling up your regular roster spots, right? Everyone else at utility is going to be starting whatever sixth outfielder they felt like drafting, right? Give me Nelson Cruz all day. We're talking about a guy who had a career low his lowest since 2013. Since leaving the Rangers, he had his lowest home run total, his lowest run total, and his second lowest RBI total. But those were 37, 7, 70, and 97. All right, this guy is unbelievable. His batting average, 256. And you know, at first you're like, oh man, 256, that's not very good. Well, see, the thing is, he's a career 274 hitter, even with that 256 average. And if you go and jump over to XStats, which is something I love to do, I go, what was his expected average based on the way he hit the ball? 280, right? Which looks a lot more like what he's been doing in the recent years. And everyone's going to say, everyone who doesn't pick Nelson Cruz, I think, is going to say the same kind of thing. And that's, I don't want to be caught holding the bag on Nelson Cruz. Well, y'all don't have to hold the bag. I will hold the bag for you, and I will take the 35-plus home runs. I will take the close to 200 run-plus RBI. Now that he's actually in a better lineup in Minnesota than it was going to have in Seattle, and with a high average to go with it, with a 270 to 280 average, I will hold that bag all day long. The guy has real power, and I am not willing to give up on a player with the type of skills with the bat that Nelson Cruz has until he actually has a season where he doesn't do it, right? And if I can pay a barely top 100 price for a guy like Nelson Cruz to get a guy who continues to be a top 50 bat, absolutely. All day long, give it to me every time. Y'all can talk about how you don't want to hold the bag. Let me hold the bag and let me win the leagues.
All right. Well, that's as good. That, you know what? We're just going to end it right there.
There we go. And we said that this was boring.
Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter and what you're working on?
I got one more point to sneak in there.
No.
Michael Conforto at 108 or Nelson Cruz at 97? To me, you got to take Conforto and go with a little bit of the upside there, knowing Conforto can hit 30 home runs too.
And yeah, but I think Cruz can hit 40.
And he could also peter out and hit 20 or 25, but yes, I know.
And Conforto could blow his shoulder out again.
No, I know that. And nothing about Cruz has suggested that he's going to slow down. So I totally get the point. I kind of do like Cruz, but I think it was a good argument to have. And I think one other quick point to make about tying up your utility spot, I think when first base was deeper, there was more of an argument to maybe, all right, I don't want to tie that spot up. But now that first base is so weak, I feel a little better about tying it up. Anyways, I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28.
And what are you working on?
Just getting ready for the baseball season, trying to maybe add a little more drama and controversy. Get Scott fired up. I mean, I wish we had more time to hear about his day at the National Curling Championships, but I guess that's going to have to wait.
Which was awesome. Oh, I got to sit by some folks who were from North Dakota, which is the heart of the curling belt, if you didn't know, and learned a lot about the game. And I'll be joining a recreational curling league coming up pretty soon. So I am pumped. If you get a chance to go see curling, go watch curling. It is the best mix of shuffleboard, pool, and bowling that you'll ever see.
And Scott, where can you be reached and what are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Chusef Esquire. That's Chusep Esquire. Right now, I'm actually working on some stuff over at Pitcher List, mostly doing some, you know, a breakdown of a mock draft that I just did for some dynasty stuff over at, you know, our site, Friends with Fantasy Benefits. You'll start seeing me again when the season pops up again, doing some. Until then, I'll be doing some updates to the relief pitching ranks in the guide. If you haven't bought it yet, go get it, the Fantasy Benefit. Otherwise, when the season pops up, you'll see me doing some Friday articles on DFS. Friday's the best day to play. You got all the games going on Fridays, so feel free to check it out if you feel like spending a few dollars to see if you'll win something.
And I can be reached at BBrandisFWFB. We're just getting ready to get ready and started for baseball season, and we're trying to do some stuff with the recent trade deadline for the basketball season. So from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.